Atheist Nomads, episode 150, news for June 9, 2016.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
We are the Atheist Nomads, bringing you history, science, politics, religion, and interviews with leaders in the atheist community. Not all those who wander are lost. Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin. Joining me as always is Wesley.
Hello, everybody.
And joining us today is my lovely wife, Lauren, whose microphone I just hit.
Yay!
Yeah,
Dustin, how are you feeling?
I pulled or strained a muscle in my neck, and That is never good, never fun.
Until
I left work early yesterday and went to urgent care, and I got muscle relaxers, and so I am mixing muscle relaxers and Blackwater Imperial Stout from Edge Brewing, 11% alcohol by volume, 22 ounces. I can't drive anyway, and this will just slow me down.
Unfortunately, he can't turn and look at me either, so...
But I can see you on the screen!
It doesn't stop you from smacking my microphone around!
I was gesturing
look,
for the camera.
You upset Rocco.
So for those of you listening on the podcast feed, this is also being streamed live on YouTube. And the video will also be available on YouTube forever. So
yay!
You can check it out. Go to atheists or go to youtube.com/atheistnomads and you'll be able to find episode 150 right there.
I think Wesley should make that face again.
Yay! And so Wesley's apparently doing pretty shitty.
Oh no, this is a great week. What are you talking about? Yeah. Can you hear me all right?
Mm-hmm.
We can hear you just fine and see you.
Okay.
Yeah. We can hear you and we can see you, and it's
let's see.
The quality isn't quite as good as your main microphone.
Looking good, no polyps.
But
nice.
Heck, for more than 4 years and 150 episodes, we've been doing this. This is the first time either of us have had to phone it in.
Ha!
That is not bad.
not bad.
Literally.
Literally.
I had a crime perpetrated against me. I actually had my mountain bike stolen off the back of my truck, and inside my camper, locked up in my truck, was my laptop, which got taken at the same time. Hooray!
Boom.
Yeah.
So,
which has been your recording rig?
Yeah, I used to be able to afford good things, and if anybody out there is feeling generous, I wouldn't mind if you kicked me a few bucks.
Yeah.
So I can get going again. I do have an old laptop from like it's more like 10 or 12 years ago.
Ooh.
An old fashioned 1.6 gigahertz EEPC with a Windows XP and
the stable
Windows
one.
It won't update. I can't.
No, that's not supported anymore.
No, totally not. I can't get drivers, so I can't hook it to my rig. It just looks cute.
Yeah.
I would sure like a little bit of help if anybody's willing. I'll tell you what, though.
Do you not have a desktop or?
Desktop is out of commission. I'm not sure
Boo.
Why.
Oh.
I haven't used it in a few months.
Oh,
and
well.
Tried turning it on, and it just wouldn't turn on. So, I'm figuring, I don't see any signs of life, so I'm figuring power supply.
Ooh.
That sucks.
I'm out close to $2,500, so.
Shit.
That's including the bike?
Bike and laptop.
I'm sorry, man.
So, yeah, I used to be able to afford good things, like I said.
Damn. All right.
Anyways.
Yeah,
let's work on that.
On. What happened on this day in history?
This day in history? The year of our Lord, 1978. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints opens its priesthood to all worthy men, ending a 148-year-old policy of excluding, black men.
Wow.
The West is white for a reason.
Yeah. So you might have heard about this, all of their old history about, there being three groups in heaven, essentially, before they came to Earth. There was like the good angels and Jesus, and then there was Satan and all of the bad angels and demons that followed him. But there was also Switzerland, essentially. And, Satan and all those, good angels, all those angels that followed him became, the devil and all of the demons that we think of now. And Switzerland, however, since they didn't want to take a side, they got cursed with dark skin, and the Mormons took that shit seriously. Wouldn't let black people hold positions of power for, fucking 148 years.
Dude, that's totally a character off of the movie Dogma. The main bad guy sat on the fence, and he ended up being the bad guy because doing nothing is worse than doing bad things.
Yeah.
Or not doing anything at all.
Yeah.
So there's quite the issue with that. Basically anybody of African descent. However, supposedly people from like Pacific Asian Isles and other places who still technically had not white skin could still become priests, but I still have a feeling that was pretty fucking rare.
Huh. That was probably just for missionary convenience.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. they put out a letter from the First Presidency, which was released on June 9th, and it was signed by Spencer Kimball, Eldon Tanner, and Marion G. Romney. And I have a feeling that's
coincidence?
Really related to Mitt Romney. There's only like 10 families that really have a lot of power in the Mormon Church, and
the Romney is
definitely
one
of them.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The Romney runs strong.
Do you have pet crows, by the way?
No, but my front door is open because it's fucking chilly.
Oh, that's right.
Out here.
Okay. Is that her cause? I'm like, crows.
Pet crow.
They're distracted by shiny things.
Yeah. So hooray for, moving into, the 18th century and shit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Along. Yeah. And that's still considered a major critique of the LDS church. It's like, oh, really? You only just like black people in your church?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, they had to adapt.
They were forced to maintain their tax exempt status,
which they shouldn't even have.
All right, let's go ahead and dust off the degree, which is especially poignant this week since in 2 days from the date of release, it will be 10 years since I graduated from Walla Walla College with a Bachelor of Arts in Theology.
Ooh.
Anyway, we're going to talk about prayer today. Ooh. We're going to start off with Catholic prayer. And what makes Catholic prayer unique is rather than praying to God, most often Catholics pray to Mary or one of the saints.
Hail Mary.
And in doing that, they are asking, going to an intermediary who they think might help them out, who can go speak to God on their behalf. Then you have Protestant prayer, which is praying to God alone. So you aren't praying to any saints. You are just praying directly to God, or often addressing it to Jesus. And then there is intercessory prayer, which is a little bit different. That is where a bunch of people pray on someone's behalf. So I guess in that kind of a role, praying in the Protestant way, you kind of handle it Catholic style. It's just you're the saint instead of
Is that when people ask their whole churches to pray for a particular person or an event?
That is intercessory prayer so everybody else is interceding on that person's behalf. That can include people who wouldn't be praying themselves, people who aren't believers getting prayed for. And
apparently that happened for me once. My friend was very happy and told me that I got prayed for at her church. I'm like, me? Specifically me. She's like, yeah, you. They said your name. I'm like,
it worked.
And one thing with the whole
you poor deluded child.
Intercessory thing is kind of interesting is you have the One of the few times prayer is really talked about in the New Testament, Matthew 6, Jesus condemns the Pharisees for praying loudly in the synagogues and on the street corner.
Isn't Matthew 6 really close to like pray in private?
That's the same place where it says pray privately.
Yes.
And it
point to Wesley.
He specifically calls out praying loudly in public for a spectacle and hoping that God will listen because you utter many words. And so
Tebow style.
That's basically
that happens all the time.
That's the point with any kind of public prayer that Protestants love, and also intercessory prayer, where if you get enough people talking to God, pestering him, then maybe he might finally do what you are asking him to do.
All those Facebook memes. Mm-hmm. So many Facebook memes.
So now let's go ahead and leave Christianity for a moment. Of course, us and most of our listeners who at some point were Christians have already left Christianity. Yeah, a little too slow for it to be a good joke. Jewish prayer. It is recited from the Siddur, the traditional Jewish prayer book. Men are required to pray three times a day. But again, this is from reading out of the prayer book. There is the morning prayer, the Shacharit. I was going to do so much better, but the muscle relaxers are not helping. Afternoon prayer, which is the Mincha. And then evening prayer, which is the Arvit. Women are required to pray once or twice a day, depending on which Jewish tradition they're in. And additional prayers will happen during major holidays. And this one is called the Musaf. And a fifth prayer is recited on Yom Kippur and is called the Ne'ilah. Big difference between Jewish prayer and Christian prayer. Jewish prayer, you're reciting stuff that's been written down.
You don't just make it up as you go along.
Yeah, you don't make it up as you go along. Rabbis figured out the prayers that were appropriate to pray long ago, and so you just go from what they have written. Prayers that are known to work and be good.
Is the Lord's Prayer in the Bible somewhere?
Yes.
Okay, so that's like
that's
one.
Also in Matthew 6.
Oh. Question is, do the Jews have to face a direction or kneel in front of a thing to pray?
No, they don't.
There's lots of bowing.
There ends up being bowing as you are reading the prayer.
Is it like a rhythm keeper?
Yeah, kind of. I have been to a couple of synagogue services, and it's actually pretty interesting. For Muslims, prayer is one of the five pillars of Islam. It is also recited or read, and prayers happen five times each day at very prescribed times and must be done on a mat facing Mecca. Which is why Muslims have prayer rugs. It is blasted over the loudspeaker from the mosques. And when I was in Amman, I observed more than a 1 hour discrepancy across the different mosques in the part of Amman, Jordan that I was in. Some started as early as 2:15 and the last ones were at about 3:30. And I could hear probably five of them from the hotel.
Oh.
When I had jet lag, that was really bad. Really bad.
But that's really cool. I mean, culturally, that was a really cool thing to experience.
And what they're calling out from the loudspeakers isn't the prayer you're supposed to be praying. It is just the call to prayer. Because after they recite the call to prayer, then you have to recite a prayer. Prepubescents, menstruating women, and women in the 40 days after childbirth, if they are bleeding, are exempt. And
that's interesting. Oh, mm-hmm. Because they're unclean too young.
Yep.
I was going to say, oh, way to give the girls a break. But no, that's never how it is. The girls never get a break.
No. They just, anyway, it starts from a standing position, and then you bow, and then you lay prostrate on the ground, and then you sit at the end.
I think that's part of CrossFit.
But you have to go through those motions as you pray. With Catholics, when they pray, they have to cross themselves.
Isn't that just called a burpee?
Right? I think there's a clap or something involved, though, with a burpee.
And one other important aspect with Muslim prayer is you have to wash your hands and your mouth and your nostrils, your arms, your head, and your feet.
Now, is this like actual wash or is this just sprinkling water?
It's
Like a ritualistic wash.
I would suspect it's probably moved more ritualistic. So but there is actual washing involved.
Basically everything but the legs and balls.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which, if you think about it, that is really clean. That's a clean way of living.
That's the one place that really needs a good scrubbing.
Yes, but this is, if you think about it, historically, religions did have one benefit, at least one beneficial place in society, in that they have had a tendency to really push for hygiene. And Jews have always had a big part of doing ritualistic washing before various feasts. So at least monthly, you'd be having to bathe to take part in the services. Muslims, you're at least having to wash your hands and mouth. If you can wash your hands and mouth, that covers 90% of your hygiene needs realistically right there. And if you can be doing that, and if you're doing that five times a day, from a ancient desert culture, that would be, assuming that wasn't something that was already happening, that would be a definite improvement in cultural hygiene and improving health.
Better than the medieval Europeans.
Yeah. Especially after the plague hit and they decided, oh no, you can't wash because that will kill you.
Yeah. Sew yourself into a bag and spring back out in springtime.
Hindu prayer is chanting mantras. It can also include yoga and meditation. And some forms will actually call on personal forms of God, which would be Shiva, Vishnu, or some of Vishnu's avatars like Rama and Krishna. And Buddhist prayers are similar, except they'd be calling on Buddhas if they are calling on anyone. And Buddhists have a tendency to focus more on meditation. But what's interesting when you look at, especially when you start looking into, some of the other religious practices of ancient religions, it started off with you do sacrifices to try to get a god's favor. Well, as sacrifices went out of style, then it went to prayers. But you aren't worthy of actually praying yourself, so you had traditions of doing recitations, because at least you've got holy words that can guide you in how you can appropriately speak to God, because you aren't worthy of doing that yourself.
Which includes the saints,
and
right?
Then the next,
or is that the next level?
The next level is you have the saints, so that way you can at least speak to someone in heaven directly and get what's on your mind out to them, so they can talk to God on your behalf, because you're still not worthy. Then you finally get to the Protestants. So in the last 500 years, where prayer actually got to the point, or communicating with people's deities got to the point of directly using your own words directly to your deity.
Wow. Makes it seem so babyish now. Oh, you think you're talking to God? Mm-hmm. No. Silly Protestants.
The part that always pissed me off is God is supposed to be all-knowing, all-powerful. So he already knows what's going to happen.
It's all part of his plan.
How are you changing his mind by praying?
The one that makes the most sense is the sacrificial systems, where you are doing something that your God calls on, that he has said you can do to win his favor. And you have to do that to win his favor so he will do what you want. You're trying to bend God's will. The others are still trying to bend God's will, but the sacrificial system at least makes a little bit more logical sense.
Yeah, a prayer is really just a shot in the dark, but if you know that he wants a dead lamb, then go ahead and go for the dead lamb. He loves that shit.
And dead children.
God just likes fucking barbecue. But...
Oh, and barbarians. Oh, God, slaughter them. Really, he just loves that. Kebab.
All right, we are going to take our first break, and then we'll be back with news.
Atheist Nomads is proudly brought to you by Archway Hosting. Check out their low-price, full-featured hosting solutions at archwayhosting.com. That's ARCHWAY hosting.com.
Hey, we're also brought to you by listeners just like you. Find out how you can become a patron at patreon.com/atheistnomads. That's patreon.com/atheistnomads.
All right. So for our first story, in August 2015, Keith Strawn of St. Anthony, Idaho, and for a little bit of background, St.
Oh, wait,
Anthony.
No.
is a tiny little town outside of Rexburg, which is outside, well, it's the home of BYU Idaho, which is just outside of Idaho Falls on the far eastern edge of Idaho, otherwise known as North Utah.
It has a lot of, it has one of North America's largest living sand dunes.
Yes, it does have that. It
which is, Dustin got us stuck in once, and it was awesome.
It's also, it looked, shut up.
It really did look like dirt. It was not dirt. It was sand.
And there was gravel further ahead, so I thought we could drive further than we could.
Anyway, St. Anthony.
And it
bumfuck
is,
nowhere.
It's in a dry county, which, yes, Idaho actually has a few. And it is one of the most Mormon communities in the country.
In the world.
In the world, yes. It beats out parts of Utah.
Yeah, eastern Idaho beats out, like, almost all of southern Utah, except for the fundamentalists.
Well, northern Utah.
Northern Utah.
Yeah.
No. Salt Lake City is not even nearly as Mormon.
Yeah. It's only like 50% Mormon.
So I heard there's a couple assholes in this town.
Yes. So Keith Strawn took his 14-year-old pregnant daughter and her rapist to Missouri to get married.
Right.
The girl has since had a miscarriage, and both her father and rapist are headed to or already in jail.
Slightly a gold lining.
Yeah. Aaron Seaton, who was 24 at the time, pled guilty to rape and is serving a 15-year prison sentence.
Yeah, 24 and a 14-year-old.
Uh-huh. And they had to travel.
Irresponsible.
And they had to travel as far as Missouri to find a place where they could legally do this.
I'm honestly surprised that Idaho didn't allow this. We're just...
Idaho's got a hard 16.
Or Kentucky.
Idaho is 16 with parental consent.
Yep, and you couldn't... Well, obviously, you get a girl pregnant and you marry her.
So, her father told the judge...
Oh, in fact, that's what he said, isn't
it? That, actually, yeah. If you get them pregnant, then you marry them. So, the defense wanted 6 days. The prosecutor wanted 10 days. With a 3-year suspended sentence, and the judge instead sentenced him to 120 days in jail, eligible for work release after 60 days, and a 4-year suspended sentence, two of which can be dropped.
I believe that is called throwing the book at him?
In a really messed up way.
Yeah, I mean...
Holy shit.
He made his 14-year-old daughter marry the man that raped her.
Uh-huh.
That's... Now, they. I hate to split hairs. I hate to be the devil's advocate here. But is this non-consensual rape or is it statutory consensual rape?
Irrelevant. He's 20 fucking 4 years old.
I know. But is the girl like, does she mind being married to this guy?
Now,
or
according to one of the articles I read, she did.
That's where I was kind of going.
She was like, the dad was not wanting to do this. And asked her several times as they were driving to Missouri if she wanted to marry him. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if I believe
that's
that.
That's hearsay.
That's hearsay. That's his claim and his defense.
That sounds like the dad trying to get off of it.
Even if that's true, he knowingly and willfully assisted and facilitated the continued sexual assault of his daughter.
Right, because once they're married, then all bets are off and the guy can do whatever he wants with her.
Yeah. And this is one of those things, especially considering the fact of how religious of a community it is. Obviously, this was religiously motivated. I'm not saying that it is necessarily the old standard of if you rape someone, you have to marry the girl. This might just be the more modern version of if you get her pregnant, you have to marry her.
It sounds more like a modern shotgun wedding.
But holy fucking shit. And the prosecution only wanted him to spend 10 days in jail.
Yeah, that's one of the things that you'll notice in those kind of communities where everybody's in the same ward or in the same district as each other, and they don't want to necessarily hurt each other. It doesn't do the community good.
Yeah.
But there are some crimes that are just kind of like, you know what? He did a douchey thing and he needs to pay for that. Yeah. I feel bad for the girl. She lost a father and a husband in this.
Well, she only...
At least they'll come out of jail and she can go back to normal, I guess.
Dad will be out of jail in 60 days.
She's still married, though, right?
No, that would have been invalidated. No. That was not...
It wasn't a legal marriage.
That's a marriage that would be, either the judge annulled it or, that marriage did not stand.
I don't see it written down somewhere. I just was curious.
Yeah. One thing the judge said.
That is really creepy.
If I can find it again.
And it happens to a lot of girls, too. Oh, it just sucks.
While you spend those 120 days in jail, perhaps you'll think about the 120 days your daughter was in a vile farce of a marriage to a rapist.
Wow.
That's what the judge said to Strawn.
Is that where the 120 days came from?
Yeah.
Now, that's awesome.
All right, so we're going to drop down I-15 to a Salt Lake suburb, Clinton, Utah, where a dad was shopping at the local Walmart when his children needed to use the restroom, both of them. So he took his 7-year-old son and his 5-year-old daughter into the men's room with him. So far, that all makes perfect sense.
Happens all the time.
You're not going to send a 5-year-old into the bathroom alone at Walmart.
No.
And so when he got in there with them, another man told him that it was inappropriate for his daughter to be in there and then started punching him in the face. Once Chris Adams, the father, was sure that his kids were safe, he quickly got the man out of the bathroom, and at, I think I saw 6'3", 250 pounds, he dropped the man and pinned him to the ground until store employees could take over.
What a very nice, restrained man.
Uh-huh.
He didn't punch him out. He just put him down. That takes restraint.
It does, but that is still technically assault. So.
It is, yes. But he was assaulted upon first. You can defend yourself you've been assaulted.
You can to an extent.
But he is also taking away that person's right to be able to move and or get away.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that is actually
if somebody assaults you, you don't want them to get away. You want them to pay for it.
Well,
and plus his children are still standing right there.
He was watching. So this would have been a case of Papa Bear got poked. The guy got what you could expect. This man was not going to let him just walk away while his kids were still going to be in the store. He wanted somebody to take control of him. Store employees took over, and then the police arrived, arrested, and immediately released him.
Okay.
Actually, I don't think they even actually arrested him. They cited him and released him. But at least at that point, he was in the hands of the police.
Right, which is the most that you can expect. I don't know. If I got punched in the face by somebody, I would not want that person to just be able to walk away. I would want there to be some kind of, some kind of official saying, all right, you did something wrong. Don't do that again. Because obviously this guy was off his rocker. So what if a 5-year-old girl's in the men's...
Yeah, I remember up to 7 or so going into the women's restroom with my mom.
This big push now for transgender bathrooms, but there should also be it should be a transgender friendly / parent bathroom where parents can safely take their young children where there'll be changing tables and they're friendly to both genders.
Well, I think this is directly a response to the transgender bathroom issue because it's never been a problem for a mother to go into the bathroom with her young son.
Right.
Nobody has ever cared about that. And it's only a recent thing where fathers are actually being reasonably involved in their children's lives to be in positions where they might be at the store alone with the kids and need to take them to the bathroom.
And every argument that you ever hear, it's always about what if a little girl sees a dick? Yeah, it's
she's seen dad.
It is always framed as that argument.
And at 5, she's not going to remember if she does.
You know what? I would just rather just not see men in women's restrooms. Just see restroom. Just fuck it.
Right.
Stalls everywhere.
Stalls. Get rid of the urinal thing, and just you're fine.
All right, we are going to move on from the story of an awesome parent. So we've gone from shitty parent to awesome parents to
parent shittier parents.
Really shitty parents. Radhika and Emil Radita's son was hospitalized and diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at the age of 3.
Boo.
So far, sad, but not atrocious. That happens. Then the parents refused to accept the diagnosis or allow their son to be treated. So he was taken away from them. Yay! For a year. Boo. Then in 2009, they moved from BC to Alberta. They were Canadian.
And they didn't mention this shit to any agencies.
Nope. And then on May 7, 2013, the boy died at 15 years of age, weighing 37 pounds.
Which, by the way, is how much your skeleton and tissues weigh.
He was the weight he should have been, like, at 3.
He was literally skin and bones.
Average for a 4-year-old.
That is truly sick, sad, and disgusting. That his parents did this to him.
I'm sorry that he had to live till 15.
That in virtually any jurisdiction is criminal failure to thrive. You can have your kids taken away from you or go to jail for your kids not being at least into the realm of normal on weight, let alone 100 pounds off.
Well, it warms my heart a little bit to see that they're getting charged with first degree murder. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not manslaughter. So anyway, they're getting...
Before we get there, the parents called fellow members of the Romanian Pentecostal Church in their town in Canada to come and pray over the boy. They claimed that he had died but was then resurrected. And they also claimed that doctors had given the boy diabetes by giving him insulin. The cure caused the illness? No, that's some serious crazy
bullshit
there.
That's backwards homeopathy.
Uh-huh. And the church members, who, for the record, as was clarified in the trial, did not, at least not any of the rest of them, object to medical care. They finally convinced them to call 911. And they are now being tried for first-degree murder and will hopefully be able to report on a verdict in one of the next few episodes.
God, how long was he deceased before they finally called?
From what
it was just a few hours.
From what I've read, yeah, it's a few hours, 4 or 5 hours probably.
Oh my god.
Enough to stink up the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And this is one of those where, okay, if this church did not have a problem with medical care, they should have done something about it, considering the fact the boy was 37 pounds. They would have known him for years, and they were witnessing obvious neglect and or severe abuse.
No, yeah. This is definitely severe abuse. Whether they do it directly on purpose or through neglect, I'm not seeing a difference on this one.
Oh, at the point that you caused that, that's worse than failure to thrive. 37 pounds at 15. That is failure to be a functioning human being. They did not provide their son with the basic necessities of life.
Right. So it's just like those people who lock up their kids for 15 years. And
Worse, actually. This is worse. Because at least those kids are usually given the basic necessities of life. They're at least given adequate food and water that they can process. This is a kid with type 1 diabetes. He can't process food normally. He needs insulin to be able to digest food and to grow.
Hmm.
37 pounds, that's someone should have called the cops. And I would say, you know, realistically, this would be a family, an immigrant family, most likely, since they were going to a Romanian church. But there needs to be stronger requirements for mandatory reporting for churches, because churches are in the position of having contact with people who normal services are less likely to be in contact with. People who aren't taking their kids to the doctor, doctors can't call it in. If you aren't taking your kid to the school can't call it in.
Yeah, there's no way that kid was going to school.
So we need to make churches mandatory reporters so they can call in abuse and neglect. And fuck the sanctity of the confessional. That's the reason this has been off limits all of this time. Because Catholics need to have somebody that people can talk to. Well, all right, if we really have to do this, exempt the pastor as long as somebody on staff or designated by the church is a mandatory reporter.
Yeah.
Make it an elder or a deacon.
They were also in the medical system when they were in Vancouver, BC.
12 years before he died, and they rejected the medical system at that point.
They might have rejected it, but they were also at least part of it. But when they moved to Alberta, they never failed to register, and nobody, I guess, suppose nobody really followed up or was able to track them. So that's another failure to me.
Yeah, if a kid's been taken away from parents at one point, then there needs to be follow-up on that. And if the parents move, especially follow-up on that.
So, and one thing I want to point out with this, yes, religion is the is an underlying element in this, the lack of accountability. The parents were not doing this necessarily because of religious belief.
True, they, it could be a separate kind of belief that just leads them to... If they thought the doctors gave their kid diabetes... Uh-huh. Don't trust doctors.
This is an anti-modern medicine belief killing a kid. And that, and worse than killing a kid, making a kid suffer for 12 years before he dies.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
That is severe. 12 years, 80% of his life was torture. Before he finally got the mercy of death. That's what the story is.
Well, I hope the next story is a little happier.
funnier, at least.
Nope.
We're going to take
we're
going to take our second break, and then we'll be back.
We love hearing from our listeners. You can email us at contact@atheistnomads.com, tweet us at atheistnomads, send us a message on our Facebook page at facebook.com/atheistnomads, or better yet, call us and leave us a message at 541-203-0666. We might even play it on the show. You can also help us out by leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast directory of choice.
On January 23, Jake Strootman got drunk at a hockey game.
Woo!
As people do. And his team won. So, woo! Yeah! And then he came across some Baptist street preachers, which makes me wonder, what the hell were they doing out that late at night? Unless they were trying to rile up drunk people.
Yeah, pretty much.
And they were telling him and his friends that they were going to hell. And then a fight broke out, which Strootman didn't start. Someone else showed up and broke one of the cameras that a church member had filming the preaching. And Strootman ended up at the bottom of the pile. And then when he got up, he decked one of the preachers. So he pushed up with one hand and swung with the other.
Yeah, it was a blind punch.
Yeah. That is in my mind, if you find yourself in the middle of a fight, that is a reasonable response. That's
totally
an instinctive response. And so then Strootman has since been convicted of misdemeanor attempted assault. And he hit the preacher, who wears glasses, right next to the eye.
Ow.
So either like nose or temple.
I think he broke the lens on the dude's glasses, which is shitty, sure. But the motherfucker that started the fight, gone. Didn't get charged with anything. He left the scene.
So Strootman, convicted of misdemeanor attempted assault, and the 23-year-old Catholic, yes, Jake Strootman is a Catholic, suggested that Judge William Mallory, who is well known for handing out creative sentences, to sentence him to 12 Sundays at the Preacher's Baptist Church. And the judge, William Mallory, decided, yes, let's go ahead and do that. And what he said to the street preacher, I admire the fact that you want to spread the word of God because I'm a religious man too. Also, the thing about religion, I think it's kind of personal. And for me, I don't try to impose my religion views on other people, except for sometimes in this room.
Boo.
In this
room. That's unconstitutional and hypocritical.
Yeah, I think creative is another word for illegal. Didn't they get the 12 Sundays because they were going to sentence this guy to 3 months in jail?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he's a window washer, so 3 months without work as a window washer means... He would have been homeless.
You don't have a house.
Yeah. Homeless and starving.
Well,
motherfuck.
It's better than going to jail. Still, it's just messed up.
If
I don't know. I mean, that's like that should have been sentencing an atheist to go to AA if he's a
that he's should an it should have been community service. It shouldn't have been going to somebody, especially if the guy suggests it himself.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh, okay, so this isn't punishment at all for you because it looks like you're looking to do this.
Yeah. So but the fact that the judge said
no words.
He doesn't like to impose his religious views on others, except for in the courtroom, right. Which means he doesn't
right.
impose.
So don't.
He doesn't like to impose religious views on people when he can, when it is
when he's
legal.
Got a captive audience.
But when he has a captive audience,
literally captive,
and he can literally impose it, yeah, then he can.
Yeah. So, are you guys is FFRF going to? Or one of those guys gonna write in and get this judge taken off the bench?
Well, the original source I got for this was the link I have in here is Religious News Service. I don't have the original link I had, but it was from Americans United.
So basically, the judge is saying, "I'm not an asshole, and except for when I can control you."
And if Americans United,
it sounded like he was condemning the guys, like, don't be an asshole, because I wouldn't be an asshole except for right now.
Well, okay, he actually went a bit further. Before that, he said, I'm trying to get to something reasonable here, and I'll be honest with you guys. Sometimes in certain places, people don't want to be preached to. You agree with that?
Yep.
To the preacher. So don't go preaching out on the public street at midnight, which is perfectly legal and... Yeah, douchey, but okay. Hell, it's fun for some people when they are bar hopping to have some street preachers to heckle.
I still think that the thing that should have been handed down was pay the pastor's medical bills or buy him a new set of glasses, pay court costs, get the fuck out.
I still think community service would have been...
Community
valid.
Service, sure, but you know,
heck,
pay
if he's
going to
do
glasses.
How many 12 Sundays? That's 12 uh-huh. Sundays of good labor that they could have gotten out of this guy.
But
12
this
Sundays
guy,
of community service would have been
this is
overkill.
This is still for a blind punch that a guy was trying to get out of a bad situation, out of getting out of a dog pile of a fight.
Yeah, well, it still beats jail.
I don't think that he should be really no. charged with anything. Or have anything other than like, buy the guy new glasses, court mm-hmm. costs, get out.
Yeah.
Just that's yeah. it. Over and done.
So moving along. So the Brewster County Sheriff put Latin cross decals on his department's patrol cars.
Boo.
Back in December. This was something that was brought to the attention of FFRF.
Yay.
They got two local plaintiffs. And apparently their letter was ignored, so they filed suit on March 2. The county commission, in response, settled the case, removed the crosses, and instituted a policy prohibiting religious, political, and personal messages on county property. In the end, this cost the county $21,970 in legal fees, $400 in court costs, and $2 in damages, $1 for each plaintiff.
Oh, they got a dollar.
I love those.
Those are
I love those $1.
Those are to file lawsuit, you have to ask for money. And so if all you want is a change in policy or law, you ask for a dollar.
No, okay.
So yeah. You don't get any money out of it.
Those.
But the lawyers win. And that's what happens in every case like this. The lawyers win.
Yeah, 21,000.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. That
oh shit.
But this has been happening in Idaho, where they put mostly In God We Trust. Mm-hmm.
Which FFRF is not fighting because that has the...
Because God is generic.
It is ceremonial deism, ceremonial. And it fits on... You know, it's officially the national motto, and if you want to get that off of patrol cars, you need to... From their standpoint, you have to challenge the national motto, which courts have not ruled favorably for, and FFRF is smart enough to try to avoid setting bad precedent.
Right. Don't start a fight you can't win.
But you can say God is ceremonial deism, because that doesn't necessarily spell out which god you're talking about. But when you put a cross on there, all bets it's are done. Off. It's clearly the Christian god. And depending on which cross you use, you can tell which denomination or branch of Christianity it is.
No way. Yahweh.
God damn it.
Oh, well, that was a good happy story.
And for our
And you actually started to sound like a real, like, angry atheist podcast.
Yeah.
For our last God. One, we've got a one that I'm hoping will prompt some discussion. A public swimming pool in Brooklyn, New York, had segregated swimming hours for one of the pools for about 2 decades. And this policy was ended after the New York City Commission on Human Rights warned them that this violated city law. Then after many complaints from the local Hasidic community, the policy has been reenacted. The Hasidic community believes that removing the segregated hours discriminates against them because they can't feel comfortable going to the public pool. Like, their women can't feel comfortable going to the public pool wearing clothes appropriate for a pool if there are men there. They've also used these complaints to ask for male lifeguards to not be working during those hours. Okay. And the opponents of this policy see this as an unfair privilege, especially considering the fact that there are private pools in the area. Two Y's in particular. Should point out, Y is short for YMCA, which is short for Young Christian Men's Association, which I could imagine why Hasidic Jews would not want to go visit. But there are private pools available that offer sex segregated hours, and that this is imposing Hasidic values on the rest of the community. So, Wesley, what are your thoughts?
Oh, fuck no. That's in a word. Three words. Yeah, no, this is just bad. I mean, this is a fucking public pool. Public. This isn't one religion's pool. Fuck them. No, get the fuck out. Go to the private pools and have your segregated time. I mean, the only thing that a public pool should be segregated for is lap swimmers away from your regular splashers. Fuck it.
No, I like to splash the lappers.
All right. I am now at 22 ounces, 11% alcohol.
Feeling pretty good, ain't you?
And muscle relaxers.
It's a good thing his part's pretty much done. This should lead to interesting talk.
Lauren, what's your take on this story?
As an atheist, fuck no.
No, what's your take?
What's my take? I'm telling you, as an atheist, fuck no. This is a public pool. It needs to have the same rules everywhere. As a woman, I can totally see it. And I can see their point of view. And honestly, it would be awesome if they did have a couple hours that were women only, simply because women do get harassed constantly at public pools. And it is unfair to tell people to go to private pools and pay extra. That's not exactly fair.
I'm assuming that you still have to pay to use the public pool.
Let's assume the price is equal across the board.
If price is equal, which is not, but if price is, like, the YMCA is incredibly expensive.
But let's assume the prices are the same. This is New York we're talking about. Everything is expensive.
Okay, everything's expensive. Okay. A couple hours in the evening for women only, I think, would actually be a nice thing in some of those communities. Whether, now, to call it Hasidic only hours or anything like that, that would be a bit much. Asking for women-only lifeguards, that's a bit much, just because the staffing isn't there, maybe. But I don't know. I would have to... If it's not...
What about trans women?
Then trans... Well, that would be a question of identification. If you identify as a woman, you can come to the women's hours.
I think the Hasids would have a shit fit about it.
Well, then they can get their privilege taken away. So if you can't play nice, no one plays at all, kind of thing. Or everybody can play, but publicly? Wait. What?
Aw, yeah. Orgy.
Because going to the pool as a woman sucks ass. And not the good kind.
It sucks ass for everybody except for the extreme rage.
Except for
guys.
The kids. I guess the kids
yeah,
like
going
it.
To a pool is fun until you're about 12.
And then it becomes yeah. awkward, and people harass you and mm-hmm. make comments about you and hit on you and touch you and, yeah.
And laugh at you.
It's the touching mostly that bothers me. Anyway, regarding pool hours, if there is one pool in a neighborhood that allows women segregated only hours out of a couple of pools, I think that would be cool. As long as it's open to all women or everyone who identifies as women.
So I'm going to go a little more nuanced here.
You think it's nuanced. You're so drugged up. I don't think anything is nuanced.
Saying the YMCA, or excuse me, the Y. Why?
Right,
because
they're
quotes.
Not associated with the Christian
they are.
Men's anymore.
They still are.
Well, they are.
It's
but
a Christian organization.
The men part in particular, they're trying to get
but
away from.
Say, yeah, they're trying to get rid of the men part. So it's just the YCA.
Women.
But still Christian. Saying that is a valid option for Hasidic Jews, I think is bullshit. So delete the Ys from the list. Unless there is a Hasidic community owned like synagogue owned pool, which would seem to be a good option if you want actual control over swimming. Make your own pool.
What kind of church owns a pool?
The ones that control entire neighborhoods like the Hasids.
Oh yeah, okay. If
they had
if they had their own neighborhood pool, I'd say they can have a Hasidic pool then. If it's a city
tie a string around
but
a
this
block
is a city pool.
This is a city owned pool. As far as city owned pools go, I think I would be okay with having gender segregated hours as long as it is no more than 2 hours in the evening per week, like or two-hour blocks during the week. So say Tuesday and Thursday is from 7 to 9 is women only.
Right, we get it.
Or more during the day.
Why? Because women like to swim during the day? You think women have all day to swim?
Hasid women don't have jobs.
Right, yeah. They stay at home, which is one of their arguments was that these women already don't get to get out very often. Mm-hmm. So to take this pool stuff away from them is it sucks because this literally is like their time away from home. And I have to say, well, that's your fault, not theirs. And again, I have to default to the gendered hours twice a week. That's cool. I like it. Anyway, that was a good discussion. Good job, Drunk Dustin.
All right. Let's go ahead and take our last break, and then we'll be back with science and technology.
Break science!
As a listener of the show, I'm going to assume you love my sexy vocal stylings. If you love the rest of the show as much as my voice, consider giving us the resources we desperately need to purchase quality cocaine and Red Bull. We make it super easy to make a one-time donation or to support us on a per-episode, monthly, or even annual basis using PayPal or Patreon. Find out more at atheistnomads.com. Use the links on the right side of the page. $1 an episode is all we ask.
I just have to say, in regards to the cocaine comment, mm-hmm. the recent yeah. study that shows that fish in the Seattle Bay Area are completely full of cocaine and antidepressants is hilarious.
Oh, please.
They must be happy fish.
They are... dead fish is what they are.
Just
these fish.
Just paint some happy fish.
But yeah, they've tested some fish, and they're like, okay, they test positive for cocaine and antidepressants. I'm surprised they're not like positive for birth control either. Yeah. But
all right, so Lauren, you've got some science for
I
us.
I do. I got some science all up in your business.
All right, all up in our mouths.
All up in your mouth.
Squirt. Oh, all up in your mouth.
That's root beer.
You've got barks. You've got a bark all up in your mouth.
There you go. See, I've given up. I'm trying to give up the soda. So it's like, oh, that looks so good. Last time I had a root beer, it was 46 grams of sugar. Oh, and it was a can. Oh, it was terrible. Anyway, everybody's been talking about this whole mining asteroids thing.
Yeah,
it's freaking awesome, right? If and or when we run out of resources here on Earth, the best way for us to find some of these rare minerals and common construction materials is on asteroids. There's a couple problems associated with that. And as a result, there's been a huge wave of funding into the research on how to get to asteroids, how to bring them back to us, how to get our manufacturing stuff up in space, all sorts of stuff. So the biggest objective that has been going around recently is, instead of going to the asteroids, how do we bring them to us? There's a company based in California called Made in Space. I like the name of the company.
So going to the asteroid, though, you're only bringing back what you want. Bringing the whole asteroid, it's going to take a lot more fuel.
It's going to take...
Shouldn't really. I mean...
Less equipment, but more fuel.
Sending people or machinery out to the asteroid would cost more than just popping on some... Anyway, Made in Space has been put in charge of just that. This is their project. Their idea is to launch an attachable set of thrusters that will basically turn any asteroid into an autonomous shuttle. So you stick them on, they drill them in, and then you start the thrusters, and you can remote control the asteroid and bring it back to the manufacturing area. Because you don't want to be sending out massive amounts of manufacturing stuff or mining stuff all over the place when you can bring all of that stuff to the main refinery.
I will be interested to see which it actually in the long run ends up being cheaper.
I think this idea is actually the cheaper way. It'll be awesome.
I see another planetary defense or a planetary defense benefit with this.
There was a standard for using microgravity, the gravity of a small craft, to push or pull an asteroid out of the way of hitting Earth. Now you can just use microgravity of that same device to pull it towards Earth.
Right, but for a defense standpoint.
Or not Earth,
standpoint,
but some other... I could see the moon being turned into a major refinery.
And for defending Earth from asteroids, if you can actually hit it with attachable thrusters, you can change its trajectory all in one piece to miss Earth.
Or to take chunks out of it and use it.
Or to put it into a usable orbit where we can harvest everything from it.
Exactly.
So a win-win. Nobody dies and we get useful materials.
Anyway, the other thing that's that has been getting a lot of funding and research lately has come as a result of the White House's newest science initiative. A couple years ago, they came out with the Brain Initiative, where they wanted to map a human brain, and tons of research money went into this, and they found an anonymous woman's brain. They sliced it all up. They put it up online, and everybody now has access to this woman's brain, images of her brain, for research. Hooray! If I could donate my body to science for anything specific, it would be for that. Just so you guys know. Dustin, you sell my brain. It'll be awesome.
Okay.
The newest one, though, is going for the body's so-called second brain. We're talking about the microbiome.
Yay! Woo!
So, a man's penis?
Not that micro. This one's way more important than that.
Oh, burn.
The microbiome initiative is really super exciting, and the whole purpose of this is to map out the human gut. We know that different bacteria do different jobs. We knew that different bacteria in certain quantities are either good or bad. That's how you end up with C. diff. It's how you end up with E. coli if it's bad. It's how you end up with excellent digestion and better metabolism if it's good. So, sounds great, but there are some problems that they're going to have to leap over in order for this to happen. So far, that we have, the only research that has actually been done is basically been on white adult male Americans.
The only people that count.
Yeah, it's a very stereotypical and not diverse picture of a microbiome. And it's just not a good way to map what is good or bad in the biome when you only have one set of data. So they need more women. They need more people of color. They need people from different continents, from different occupations. Diversity is going to be hugely key.
So is the next person going to be a white American woman?
No, actually. Oh. They just recently did research on a group of indigenous African hunter-gatherers. About as far opposite as you can get.
Okay.
One of the things that they've discovered is that a bacteria that they thought was necessary for human life was totally vacant in the hunter-gatherers.
Nice.
Not only that, but they had tremendous amounts of bacteria that in a person, an American, would probably kill them.
Oh.
They had tons of E. coli, tons of all these bacteria that normally cause a lot of sickness, but they were perfectly healthy. So the mysteries of the microbiome mm-hmm. just keeps getting like bigger and bigger. And this is turning into another brain thing where the deeper you go, the more questions you have. But they've got to get out there and they've got to get data sets from as many people as possible.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody but vegans, because they don't count.
No, especially vegans. Oh, my gosh. No, the metabolism of a vegan is it would be... You're pulling my leg.
I would want to start with get a good baseline on normal people. And then
normal? Define normal.
So and far, then, it's a white adult male American.
Right, which is not enough to have a baseline on normal people. And then once you have that baseline, then you start doing some studies, seeing what changes in the microbiome veganism causes. And what I'd be even more interested in seeing, what changes in the microbiome and thought processes happen with cleanses.
Because I have the thought processes that go along with this is huge.
I have a hypothesis there. Yes.
It affects your whole mood.
I still think that even there be a giant difference between white men of different areas of the U.S.
Absolutely. Oh, compare anybody from, like, say, the Midwest with a lot of dairy and cheese to somebody in the South where everything is fried. Totally different types of bacteria to take care of that. Totally different enzymes at work. It is going to be amazing. There was one guy who actually took antibiotics all over his skin, all over the inside of him. He did about as big of a cleanse as you can.
Hmm.
Like an actual cleanse, not the fake cleanses that make your poop look like chocolate or whatever. But, That's that Living Waters facility where they have chocolate and it just looks like poop all over their windows because they do hydrotherapy and colors. Living Waters.
Isn't that the little weird Australian guy?
No.
Yeah, it is.
Well, anyway, it's a company in Boise. Banana Man. Banana Man. I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, moving let's move. Moving on. Anyway, this guy pretty much wiped out his microbiome with weeks of antibiotics. And then did his own fecal transplant on himself with what he thought was a very healthy person's, you know, fecal material. He lost weight. He gained energy. He started craving chocolate like nothing else in the world. So, like, his whole, not his person-based personality, but a lot of things that make up a person's lifestyle changed with this change in microbiome that he did. Now some of it started to even out once he went home and got exposed to the same foods, his girlfriend, his cat. It's amazing how much you ingest of your pets. It's actually kind of cool. Maybe we'll talk about that some other time.
All right.
Anyway, I do have the link to the hunter-gatherer gut microbiome study in the show notes if you want to look into that.
Atheistnomads.com/150.
There we go. There you go. They're in the show notes. And last but not least, oh, this one's so near and dear to my heart. In January of this year, something incredibly rare happened in a Slovakian cave. Lovingly called the baby dragon due to their odd elongated appearance, a native species of salamander called the Olm, that's O-L-M, laid about 60 eggs. This breed of salamander only lays eggs about once every 5 to 7 years. So this is super rare. Not only that, but these salamanders are known to live up to 100 years. So they live incredibly long. They look like dragons. They only lay eggs every once in a while, and the chances of one of those eggs hatching is about 1 in 500. Okay, so
I hate that.
Sorry, it's 1 in 250.
Yeah,
I'm guessing statistically there's a reason why they said 2 in 500, or we could say a 1 in 250 chance that an egg will hatch.
Okay, you always round to the one, not the other.
I'm just showing what they said on the website there.
Okay.
The chance of a healthy adult coming out of one of those hatchlings is over 1 in 1,000. So it is like the chances of them having a, the chances of the eggs being laid is pretty slim. The chances of these eggs hatching is slimmer. And the chances of these hatchlings developing into an adult is like a freaking like shooting, you know, like you said earlier, like shooting a bullet with a bullet. Well, on March 30th, the eggs started to hatch and there are up to 21 viable eggs that they expect to survive. And they're still counting them as they pop out. And it's really super cool because they are beating the odds. And this incredibly endangered species of salamander like is increasing their population by nth degree just in this one egg laying. It's pretty amazing.
Ah, very nice. Very nice.
That's it for science.
Let's go ahead and move on to feedback. So we got from
Jason.
Jason Ford. That's at JCC Ford. At Atheist Nomad, so if Destin is a miracle baby, does that mean I'm a Star Trek baby since my twin and I were hard to conceive, but it finally happened at a Star Trek convention, in which my twin and I both went as newborns dressed as baby Klingons?
It would only count if your parents were dressed as furries.
If there were furries at a Star Trek convention and still managed to conceive.
Yeah.
I would say it would count.
Giant tribbles.
I would say it would count if your parents were in appropriate Star Trek costume or uniform. Then yes, definitely.
I would call him a Star Trek baby.
Yep.
They're all little Worf babies.
And from the Google Play Store, we got two app reviews from P. Miller. Neat little app, easy to use, simple. These guys are a lot of fun and book great guests, informative and entertaining.
P. Miller, thank you. Fucking A.
From Randy Wanot, easy peasy, a simple podcast library and contact directory. Wesley, Dustin, and Lauren are great.
Aww.
Thanks, man.
Rocco loved that comment. He's licking my chest because he loves it so much. Aww. Ew.
And
he just wants the salt.
5-star review on iTunes from Sylvia Gray. If you love cognitive dissonance and scathing atheists, then you will love Atheist Nomads.
Yay!
Yeah.
Got to drop some of those names there.
Well, Silea is a friend of mine now. Just a rando on the side of Facebook's, you know, friending people's suggestions. And we started chatting and seems like good people. So
nice.
Fucking A, thank you
very much. Hooray for good people.
All right. Yay. And if you want to contact us, email us at contact@atheistnomads.com. Call us at 541-203-0666. We love getting your feedback. Or hit us up at Atheist Nomads on Twitter, Facebook, at facebook.com/Atheist Nomads. Leave us a review on all of the many places and comments at other places.
And also support us through Patreon.
Yes, which we got a new patron, Inciting Incident.
Woo!
Oh, sweet.
Which we're hoping to get on that show ourselves. That would be awesome.
That was a lot of fun. Bring your movie geek knowledge.
I'm hoping so.
So I'm going to give one last shout out for myself.
Yes, please do.
I've lived in my place for many, 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 many years, and I've never had renter's insurance because nothing fucking ever happens here. So, it turns out that when you have something stolen from your car, you need renter's insurance. So, I'm proper fucked. So, if you want to kick me a few bucks so we can actually get, you know, like not a phone because I could
Bing.
Beep, boop, boop, right on. Yep. Yeah.
Right that's, on your
that's
face.
Why he's a slim, if you're on the video, that's why he's a slim wedge. And why
he's so slimming.
Why his darling. Quality isn't quite as good as usual. It's missing some of the richness of his voice.
The richness of my voice. Yeah. It's because all of my audio gear, this awesome shit, is just. Well, sitting here doing nothing.
Aww.
Oh, sad audio gear, not fulfilling its destiny. But over the next couple months, we will be throwing all of our Patreon proceeds to Wesley to help him with a new laptop or maybe even a small desktop or whatever he needs to get him back up and running.
Yeah, at this point, I give zero fucks. I just want to get back up and going. So. Any help would be awesome.
You can also support us by shopping on Amazon if you happen to be doing some shopping. Go through Atheist Nomads and help Wesley out.
Yeah.
And buy all your sex toys on Amazon.
And that's the cue right there that we were done.
Alrighty.
All right.
We'll be back next week with an interview.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.